Welcome to Beat Tonight, a late night discussion style young adult podcast on which we discuss all things young adult literature and sometimes middle grade because middle grade is also awesome. Hosted by myself, Jessica Tuckerman, Magdalene Ann, and sometimes Daniel Stanton. Our fair warnings include rude ass pets like the cat I just mentioned, our language, and spoilers. On tonight's episode, we are joined by author Sarah Jean Horwitz, who has a new book coming out called The Dark Blood Clementine, which comes out October 1st, I believe.
That's correct. Hi.
Hello. Hi. Well, welcome aboard.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
This is like very exciting. I love doing interviews. They're always so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
So as we were talking about before Maggie came on, so before we started recording, you're originally from New Jersey. Hi.
Hi.
And on your about page, there is a note about growing up not too far away from like a spooky fairy tale theme park. And I have to know, was that Storybook Land?
So it's actually not Storybook Land. It was called Fairy Tale Forest. Have you ever heard of it?
I have not.
Okay, so Fairy Tale Forest was another creepy abandoned fairy tale theme park. What's up, New Jersey? And its most distinguishing feature was that it had a building that was the giant shoe from an old woman who lived in the shoe.
Creepy.
Yeah, and you could just be driving along the road and just see this giant shoe. And it had all these decrepit characters. There was sort of a moldering Humpty Dumpty, like half falling off the wall. And yeah, it's very, very inspiring and creepy.
Oh, boy. One, Storybook Land, which like is like the big one, got a facelift not long ago, but it like needed a facelift when I was a child, and it, the same thing, you know, like all the paint is coming off of things are falling apart, and parents are like, go on, go touch the lead-based paint, you know? Like, I don't know that I want to be here, Mom. No, it's fine, go on. No, this is
man, I'm like in the shadow of Six Flags and not abandoned fairy tale theme parks.
Well, listen, you were just missing out.
Okay, because like the nightmares that stem from Storybook Land are a part of my childhood.
Oh,
I think everyone should have them.
Yeah.
All right, so I think it's time to ask about your list of passions. And the list on your site includes circus arts. And we have to know, do you partake in the circus arts?
I do partake, yes. Currently, I mostly do partner acrobatics, which basically means that strong people lift me up and put me back down. And so I do partner acrobatics. And in the past, I've also done static trapeze and also a little bit of handstand training. And I love circus. I'm going to the circus tonight, actually. I'm very excited.
Oh, I'm very excited. That sounds... How did you get into that?
Yeah.
So I was going to... I live near Cambridge, Massachusetts, and I was walking past the Cambridge Public Library, and I saw these people out on the lawn climbing on top of each other. Not in a weird way. I mean, obviously in a little bit of a weird way, but and I just walked right up to them and I was like, hi, what are you doing? And they said, well, we're doing acro yoga, which is sort of like partner acrobatics, yoga, and Thai massage had a very strange child together. And so acro yoga was my introduction into acrobatics, and from there I discovered a local circus school which offers classes for both children, adults, and aspiring circus professionals, and I've been taking classes there for like 5 years now, maybe. So yeah, it's great. It's a great hobby, super fun.
Yeah, but like sounds like a lot of fun, not for my body with all of its aches and pains, but that sounds like
oh like, everybody can do circus, everybody everybody and everybody, but yes.
It's, it's just a matter of how well you could do it. and whether break something in the process.
To be honest, sometimes I feel like I'm doing some circus arts getting out of the bed in the morning.
Yeah, I think we all feel like that.
So I am noticing a particular trend in our guests where no one has actually studied writing in school and went on to write books. You were a film production student, a fellow creative regardless, but and you graduated with a BA in visual and media arts with a concentration in writing for film and television. But you have a degree like mine where it just goes on and on and on forever. Yeah. But then you decided on writing middle grade fiction. So I was curious, what parts of your education do you use in that craft?
Oh, I think it was actually so valuable for the transition to children's literature, going from screenwriting and having my screenwriting education and going to Kid Lit was actually really valuable because I learned just a lot about like three act structure, which is very popular in, you know, film scripts, but can also be used obviously for other stories, and particularly for plot-driven commercial fiction can be very useful to learn how to plot that way and to write tightly and to plot tightly can be really helpful for pacing and for writing something halfway decent the first time around, you know, and not the fifth time around. Obviously, we all need revisions, but definitely learning how to plot that way and outline that way was really helpful. And also, one of the goals in screenwriting is to have a lot of white space on the page. So to see how few words you can sort of use to communicate what you want to say. And that was really helpful for children's literature as well, because obviously you want it to be a bit shorter and use less words.
Very true.
Yeah.
So with the background in film that you have, do you prefer TV adaptations of literature or movie adaptations?
So it depends on the book, right? Like some books and series are more suited to television than to film. I personally am a TV person. I like television more than film, so I'm always happy to watch something on television. but let's say, so for example, like I'm gonna just bring it up, Game of Thrones. so Game of Thrones, regardless of what you think about, you know, the quality, especially of the later seasons, I don't think that there's anyone who would say that Game of Thrones would make a better movie than a television series. Like, you know, because of the scope of the series and how long it is and the level of detail that's in there, I think it makes a whole lot of sense for it to be a television show. Whereas a lot of books, particularly kids' books, which can be fairly condensed, you know, would be better as movies. So it just depends.
I think Harry Potter should have been a TV show.
I feel like that could have gone either way. I feel like I could definitely see it as sort of like a limited series, you know, like a mini series. But yeah.
Yeah, like I bring this up all the time because it angers me as a fan. But also, you know, a lot of stuff got left out. And of course, like for the movie, you know, it makes sense to make it condensed and bring it in, and all of the plot relevant things are there until the later films. So there's that point in the eighth film where Harry is sitting and holding the mirror, and Aberforth is in Sirius's mirror. And because I hadn't read the seventh book since it came out, and there were like, you know, what, 5 or 6 years between the book and that movie coming out, I was like, the hell is that? and I realized like that's a very key point for that book.
And they hadn't telegraphed it well. They hadn't set it up well. Yeah.
And there were also like the ghosts, which come into play again for the seventh movie when they're moving around the castle. And the ghosts are like, here are some more secret passages you never knew about. And then they're just kind of like, first in the first movie, you know, they show up, and they show up at Halloween. And second movie, Nick is there for his petrification, and then they're gone. And I'm like, but they're like vital to a lot of stuff that happens, and especially Peeves, like all of the antics that Peeves gets into is how Harry and Ron sneak around the castle for a while.
That's true. Because, that's very true. Yeah,
like distracted, and I'm like, but ghosts. Speaking of Harry Potter, I see that you have read and reread Harry Potter and many, many times. So I'm wondering, what was the book that made you a reader?
Oh, probably Harry Potter. Yeah. And I would say, like, most specifically, probably the fifth book, Order of the Phoenix, because it was around that time that I discovered Harry Potter fandom and, like, MuggleNet and fan fiction and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. And it was really fandom that made me a bigger reader. Like, I'd always been a big reader as a kid, but it was really finding other people who read the same books as me. I was like, oh boy, I get to talk about this with people and get to, you know, see fan art and fan fiction and fan videos. And I was really into fan culture for a while. And so that definitely made me a bigger reader. Yeah.
I'm very excited. So we have five questions down. It is now time for our very first game. And for me to get to experiment with the Anchor app and play an intro song for it. Ah, ha, 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 ha.
Best of luck.
Nope, can't do it without finishing the call or screwing that up, so I'm not going to touch that again. Like, okay. I did in my last
interview. We can just do our own. Woo!
So the first game is Burn, Rewrite, Reread. Really lovely songs. We have such lovely songs on this podcast.
We do.
Maggie and I will be going through your Goodreads page and going for your highest rated books to give you three books. And then you will pick one to burn and destroy for forever, one to rewrite because you think you can fix it, and one to reread because you just want to relive the magic.
Right. So I have questions. So for burn, am I burning it out of, like, existence forever? Or am I just, like, burning, like, my copy or whatever?
You're, like, burning your copy. I don't think we need to burn it out of it. Unless you, like, lied about your rating. And you're
like, well, I had to know. And then for the rewriting, am I rewriting it? Or am I letting the author rewrite it?
You.
Oh,
you
I'm are rewriting it. Okay. All right. Good to know. I feel more prepared now. Yeah.
Sometimes you have to make the hard decisions, like that time that I had to burn Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's never going to happen for me. So. All right, I'm ready.
Okay. The first three are Howl's Moving Castle by Diana Wynne Jones, Changeling by William Ritter, and Cilla Lee Jenkins, The Epic Story by Susan Tan.
Okay, I'm going to burn, oh, Changeling, sorry, Will. Sorry, oh man, this is hard. Okay, so I'm going to burn that one. We have the same publisher. I can just get a new copy. It's fine. And I will rewrite Howl's Moving Castle, which seems ridiculous, but I was just hanging out with Susan yesterday. So I can't throw my good friend Susan Tan under the bus. Plus, that book is perfect and so funny and so amazing. If you guys ask me for book recommendations later, I was gonna totally name the Cilla Lee Jenkins series by Susan as a recommendation. So I will reread Cilla Lee Jenkins by Susan Tan. That's it. That's the judgment.
Especially because it sounds like she knows where you live.
Yes. Hi, Susan.
You ready, Maggie? Oh, who'd we lose?
I don't know. Not me.
We lost Maggie.
Oh no.
No, she'll rejoin. Same link. She'll rejoin. I'll give you another three in the meantime.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. So that would be The Final Empire by Brandon Sanderson. Here to Stay by Sarah Farazan. Welcome back, Maggie.
Hi, Maggie.
Sorry, my phone is dumb.
It's okay.
Two Can Keep a Secret by Karen McManus.
Okay. Can you repeat the first one again?
Yeah, absolutely. That was The Empire, the first Mistborn book by Brandon Sanderson.
Oh, it's the first Mistborn book. And then the second one
was Here to Stay,
Here to Stay
by Sarah Farazan. And then Two Can Keep a Secret by Karen McManus.
Okay. Okay. Let's burn Brandon. He can handle it. He's very famous. Oh, wait, no, I can't burn my copy because my copy is gifted and it's signed. Oh, no, wait, I take it back. Okay. This complicates matters. Okay. I'm gonna, I love you, Karen. Karen is also a local friend. I gotta stop rating my friend's books. Okay. So, Karen, I'm sorry. I have to burn Two Can Keep a Secret. Very sorry. I can get another one. It'll be okay. I'll just pop over to the bookstore. Next time I see her, she'll sign another one for me. It'll be fine. Okay, so I'm going to burn that one. I'm going to rewrite the Mistborn book. Although, who wants to do that? It's so long. Oh, well, I'm just going to stick with it. I will reread Here to Stay by Sarah Farazan because, oh man, that book is just poetry. So that's that one.
Okay.
This is pretty hard.
Yeah,
I hope
is.
I still have friends after.
This is always fun to do because everyone's reaction to all of the books that get up and go,
it's just hard. Yeah, just
hard. It's why I had to burn Harry Potter. It was that or rewrite it, and I can't rewrite Harry Potter, except if I would, I'd probably make it gayer. But,
I'm okay.
Okay
with that.
round three.
Going yeah. to a very special place in hell for burning Harry Potter, but that's a different story.
All right, ready for round three?
I am.
All right, so would you like to burn, rewrite, or reread The Dollmaker of Krakow by R.M. Romero, Nevermore, The Trials of Morrigan Crow by Jessica Townsend, or Siege and Storm, book number 2 of the Shadow and Bone trilogy by Leigh Bardugo?
Oh boy. Okay. Let's burn Siege and Storm. Just because I love that series, but I don't remember what happens. So I'm not emotionally attached at the moment. Let's burn that. When was the Dollmaker of Krakow and what was the other one?
The Trials of Morrigan Crow.
Oh, The Trials of Morrigan Crow.
Mm-hmm.
Let's rewrite Dollmaker of Krakow. Sorry, Rachel. I love you. And reread Trials of Morrigan Crow because that book is so magical. It made me feel like when I read Harry Potter as a kid and I was like, oh,
wow.
Other kids are gonna get to feel this and feel the magic, and so that's the one that I will have to reread.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Are you ready for round four?
Oh my gosh, yeah. I don't know if my heart can take it, you guys.
All right, round four, last round. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone by J.K. Rowling.
Why would you do this to me?
The Graveyard Book by Neil Gaiman.
Oh.
And The Girl Who Drank the Moon by Kelly Barnhill.
Why? Why? Oh, that's a terrible round, Jessica. You're so cruel.
I am. I saved this for this moment exactly.
Okay. Are you going to make me burn Harry Potter?
Are you going to be Maggie's best friend? You guys can burn Harry Potter together.
There?
Me and okay. Harry Potter burning hell together.
Here's the thing. I think let's rewrite Harry Potter.
Oh.
Dramatic choice. Wait, and then one was The Graveyard Book, and then what was the other one?
The Girl Who Drank the
Girl
Moon.
Who Drank the Moon. I would like to reread The Girl Who Drank the Moon and burn the graveyard book.
Oh, heavy, heavy, heavy.
Yeah, I think Neil will be okay. That's why I picked that one. Kelly Barnhill is also my publisher, so I didn't want to burn her book either. I wouldn't want to burn two people from my publisher.
Oh, goodness.
That's a lot.
I need so many new copies of these books. Why? Reasons. Just give them. Just give them. Don't ask.
Also, that book just has so many layers, and they have only read it once. And now that we're discussing it, I think that I actually will reread it. So you've inspired me today with your game.
Yeah. That's all we ever hope to do.
Yeah.
Alrighty. So back to the questions. Now we're in the home stretch. So you've made some playlists and Pinterest boards for Karma and Grit, which was your other published book before Dark Lord Clementine. Did you have any aesthetic collections for Clementine?
So I wanted to thank you for reminding me of this, because I do have a playlist for the Dark Lord Clementine. I haven't put it on my website yet, but I will. SarahJeanHorwitz.com. And so I should put that up there. I do have a playlist. I make extensive playlists for all of my books, and then I sort of whittle them down to more manageable levels, and then I do put those out for people to listen to if they're so inclined. And then I don't have a Pinterest board for Dark Lord Clementine. I'm not really sure why. Sometimes, you know, ideas just and inspiration just comes to you from different places for every book. So yeah, thanks for reminding me.
So every story starts somewhere, and Clementine starts with her father's noseless face. Was this the first scene that you thought of? And if not, what was the first scene that you thought of? And how did you know that Clementine's story was one worth exploring?
So that always was the first scene of the book. And that was always the first line of the book. So the first line of the book is, Clementine Morceris awoke one morning to discover that her father had no nose. And that was always the opening line of the book, and it's never changed. And in fact, the prologue of the book, which is that scene, which is where Clementine realizes that her father is being slowly whittled away, has remained largely unchanged. It was the first thing I ever wrote, and it remained pretty much unchanged from day one, which is very unusual, you know, for any writer, I think. But it's always been that way. And it's actually, no one will ever notice this except me. But it's actually a little bit of a play on the opening lines of The Metamorphosis, which is, as Gregor Samsa awoke one morning from uneasy dreams, he found himself transformed in his bed into a gigantic insect. And so, like, Dark Lord Clementine has a lot of existential dread, and so does The Metamorphosis. So. And so I knew, you know, how did I know it was an idea worth sticking with? I just kind of always knew. I came up with the idea when I was hanging out with my old high school English teacher, because I'm a big old nerd. And I was hanging out with my English teacher and some friends and her baby daughter. And her baby daughter had these sort of like a plastic farm animal set. And her baby daughter's name is Clementine. And aww. We were holding up the animals and saying, Clementine, like, what sound does the pig make? Does the pig go oink oink? Or what sound does the cow make? Does the cow go moo? But Clementine just sat there like totally stony faced and not answering us at all. She was just not having it. It was so funny. So then I put on this like creepy voice, because I'm just real random. And I put on this creepy voice and I said, the animals say nothing. They are silent. They are always silent. And then we all just cracked up laughing. And then we sort of just got this idea of the title was originally The Dark Lord Clementine and Her Silent Farm. And the idea just stuck with me. And I would just make little notes of little things I wanted to include in my phone, in a little document, you know, in the notes folder in my phone, just over a couple of years until finally, like, the Karma and Grit books were kind of done for now. And so I was on to the next project and I just brought it out and I was like, no, this is awesome. Like, it's got to be a book. So yeah, I kind of always knew it was going to be one.
So without spoiling too much, what was your favorite scene to write?
So I really like the scenes sort of earlier in the book where Clementine is just sort of tottering around her old castle being sad and alone.
That's a big mood.
Which is, yeah, like, that's a mood, right? Like, and so I had a lot of fun writing those scenes and introducing the elements of the castle and sort of, you know, her dad's a professional Dark Lord and, you know, the elements of the Dark Lordship and a couple of little sort of flashbacks to her childhood and growing up in this castle and with her dad as the Dark Lord and just sort of spending a lot of time in Clementine's head as she goes through this very rough time before she starts really getting on her adventures. And I had a lot of fun with that because Karma and Grit are like pretty crazy books. Like everything, like something is always happening and sort of the action is kind of always going. So it was great at the beginning of this book to have a little bit of quieter time to spend with the character, and I really liked that. And I also really liked, I have some flashback scenes of a supporting character named Darka Wesk Starzik, who is a unicorn huntress, and I have some flashback scenes with her which are like pretty creepy, and I'm surprised that they let me keep them in the book, but they did. And I liked writing those because in those scenes she's dark as sort of like a teenager in those scenes, and so that was sort of like dipping a toe into what writing YA might be like, which I've never done, and so that offered a little window into that world, so those were fun as well.
Well, very exciting.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Actually, there have been a few other pretty creepy middle grade reads, like have you read Shadow Weaver by Marcy Kate Conley, who you are going on tour with?
Yeah, we're gonna do, we've got at least one event together, possibly two or more. Marcy Kate is great, and I've read all of her books. I've read Monstrous, Ravenous, Shadow Weaver, Comet Rising. Yeah, I'm a fan of hers. We definitely both have the dark middle grade and fantasy middle grade going on, so. Yeah.
It's I do love it. Like, and just for any listener at home who is unfamiliar with me talking about this every podcast, you know, the opening scene of Shadow Weaver is, of course, this newborn baby looking into the darkness, and the darkness smiles back. And I'm like, oh, that's so creepy.
It's turn pretty the great. Page.
Like, love it. Next question is about the Griggin. So I the Griggin. I was like in my room on laugh. My husband's like, what's funny? I'm like, book, go, bye. And for listeners at home, it's pretty early on that we get introduced to the Griggin, which was the Grimoire chicken. And the fact that it lays spell eggs for her if and when it deems her ready to learn about those. So I'm wondering what the inspiration for the Griggin was.
I have no idea. So I honestly wish I could say that my best ideas, like, I think really hard about them. And, you know, I spend a lot of time trying out things and seeing what works and what doesn't. And I just have this endless creative well. But honestly, half the time I'm brushing my teeth and my brain is like, Grimoire, chicken, Griggin. So honestly, it just came out of nowhere, and it's one of my favorites as well. I'm glad that people seem to be really responding very, you know, very strangely to the Griggin. But yeah, Grimoire chicken is the way to go.
I just have like the Sesame Street like image in my head of you just brushing your teeth and like a horde of children going, Grimoire chicken,
yep,
Griggin.
Oh my god, the GE commercials that used to go on between them. Grimoire. Oh my god, now I can't get that out of my head.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah.
So our final question before our next game. Normally characters tend to wonder if they've been secretly bad the whole time, but Clementine discovers that she has light magic and she's actually a good person, a problem that Jessica begrudgingly associates with, despite, her being a heartless monster. The idea of moral ambiguity and the complexities of human nature, like the desire to fit in and please our families, is pretty hefty for middle grade. What was the process of writing Clementine's story, with regard to censoring language and action for a younger audience?
In some ways, that was difficult, and in some ways, it was easy. So I think one of the ways that I sort of made a lot of the darkness more palatable is with dark humor, right? The book is very whimsical and has a lot of dark humor and a bit of a, like a nudge nudge, wink wink sort of tone. And I think that because I did that, that makes some of the difficult things a little bit easier to swallow, right? And not quite so blatantly inappropriate. But it was sort of a hard line to straddle sometimes. And there were a couple of lines, mostly a couple of jokes that were darker and got toned down. Like I just came up with alternate things that were not as terrifying. Where my editor would be like, so children. And I was like, oh, right, so like let me think of a specific example. So this is just like an sort of an offhand moment. Unfortunately, most of the edits came in sort of, offhand moments and just colorful details that got changed a little bit. They talk about Clementine talks about like cutting up mandrake roots, and I have them sort of look like little babies. And in the original draft of the book, I mentioned that they look infant-like and that they scream when you cut them.
Oh, God.
And my editor was like, so no. Which, fair. But I do think that I'm surprised at some of the stuff they let me keep in, especially like Darka, that supporting character, essentially has like a murder boyfriend. And they just like let me keep in her and her murder boyfriend. And I was like, all right, like
Fine.
yeah. But I think that, because the overall message ends up being one of like finding the goodness in yourself and realizing that, the normalization of certain things that you do in your life that are evil and like being part of evil systems and how that gets normalized, and just because it's normalized doesn't mean it's right. And sort of realizing that, and that being one of the overarching sort of messages of the book, also means that a lot of the darker evil stuff ends up being more okay. Sort of because at least we come out on a better side on the end, right? It's not like we stay and hang out there and are like, why, yes, children, be evil. But yeah, that was how I navigated that.
That's good. It is time for our final game. So I need a new theme song. If you guys would.
Woo!
Thank you. Our final game is Password, just like the old game show. So we have chosen some items from famous books and maybe one from yours. And we're going to give you three hints about them and see if you can guess what the object was.
Okay, I've never played this one before, but I'll do my best.
Well, neither have we. This is a
Okay.
first for the show. This is the first.
I did see it and I was like, that is not in their interviewee packet. I was like, I'm not prepared. I'm so nervous. Okay, but I'm ready. I'll do my best.
Add it if it get if it works out well, I will add it. If not, we will never talk about it again. Okay,
Okay,
ready?
yes.
It is made from holly, contains a phoenix feather, and is 11 inches.
I mean, it's somebody's wand. Mm-hmm. Is it Harry's wand? No.
Yes.
Oh, it is Harry's wand. Okay.
Yay! Ding, ding, ding. Okay. So, it is an old compass. It has multiple hands, and it can tell the truth.
Is it a compass? No, I'm kidding.
I mean, you just, I mean, if you said it's an old compass, is it the thing, oh my God, it's been so long since I've read this, but is it the thing from His Dark Materials?
Yes, it is in fact the alethiometer.
Oh.
I only know, still reading Golden Compass.
That is a word, the alethiometer.
Alethiometer. I got really confused for a second because I'm rewatching Vampire Diaries because that's what I do when I'm having a rough time. And and they have, like, they're always after some sort of, like, device. And they have this sort of compass thing that can point towards vampires. And so you're like, it's a compass. And I was like, the vampire compass. That is not that. The alethiometer. Wonderful.
Like, it doesn't even roll off the tongue. Oh, my God. All right. This next item used to be a book. Clucks like a chicken. And lays informative eggs.
It is the Gricken.
Yeah. Maggie, do you have one? Did we lose Maggie again?
It says she's okay. Connected.
Well, Maggie, we cannot hear you if you're still there. Yep, there she goes.
Oh, bye.
So, then the last one then will be the beast's flower. The last one will be something you didn't hear. I'll make Maggie guess it.
Was it the seven murders in your books?
No, it wasn't. I'm going to make you guess it because I just read the title of what it was instead of my hints. Are you ready?
Pro tip for next time.
Indeed. Maybe have index cards in front of me with it on the back so I don't do that in the future. Maggie, you ready?
Sure.
It is a beautiful centerpiece kept in a glass case and slowly, metaphorically, falling apart.
It's the rose from the Beauty and the Beast because I know you as a person.
Very good. Very good.
Goodness. The final thing, are there any publishing professionals from interns to editors and all of the agents in between that you would like to thank and give a special shout out to today?
Yes, I would like to thank my fabulous critique partners / brainstorming buddies, John Wheeler, Alex Trevelino, and Brooke Mills. I love you all. You make my books the books they are today. So thank you. And I would also like to thank my publicist, Kristen Bianco at Algonquin, for setting this up and also for taking over her position very recently and just like totally stepping up to the plate, like right before my book launched, but then just totally being on top of everything and setting up so many fun stuff and in general being such a boss lady. So thank you, Kristen.
Well, that's lovely. It was great to talk with Kristen about setting this interview up, and it was so great to have you on tonight.
Yes, thank you for coming.
Thank you so much. I had a great time. This is my very first podcast. I hope it's not total rubbish.
That's okay. It's
on my end, not on your end.
No, you were great. It was my connectivity issues that was being an asshole all night.
I mean, at least nobody fat-faced the call to an end this time. That's like true. I did three times during our last interview. That's fine.
That's okay. My mom only called three times in the middle of this interview. But on that note, that is all the time that we have for tonight. Tune in next time when we discuss other great books like The Dark Lord Clementine. And Sarah Jean, if you wanted to plug in any of your social medias or your website where our listeners can find you?
Yes, my website is sarahjeanhorwitz.com. On Twitter, you can find me at sunshinejhwitz, although honestly, it's probably easier to just search my name. On Instagram, I am at sunshinejh, and on Facebook at sarahjeanbooks. Thank you all so much for having me today.
Thank you. So, to our listeners, check out the links in the show notes to follow the show and connect with us personally on Facebook and Twitter. And don't forget to visit bookedallnight.blog for more book reviews, blog tours, and roundups, where you'll also find the blog tour for The Dark Lord Clementine. And I believe we also have an excerpt up from the book.
We do. We have an excerpt.
Awesome. And whether you're listening on Spotify, iTunes, or Google Podcasts, make sure you drop a 5-star review of the show and have a good night, my little Grickens.
Bye.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Everybody.